This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is time for our opponent preview, everybody, as we take a look at the Seahawks' next opponent. You got the Minnesota Vikings coming up on the road this Sunday, and a man who knows a thing or two about this Vikings team is with us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Their color analyst, Pete Bursich, is with us. Pete, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're good. You know, it's interesting. I'm guessing you can relate to how things are going out here a bit. It's a little tougher out there. You guys have lost two really close, tough games. Seahawks just lost a game that looked like they had in the bag, and they found a way to lose it. So there's a lot of hand-wringing going on out here. What is happening out there in Minnesota when you lose two games in the fashion you guys did?
Well, and that's kind of the thing, is that you lose two games, but you do it different ways, right? So you go to Cincinnati, you have 12, and count them, 12 accepted penalties. Most of which were on offense. Every single one of our offensive linemen had a penalty. Everything ranged from personal fouls to holding to offsides. And then you're minus one in the take give. Obviously, we have the big fumble in overtime, and that cost us the game. Then you fast forward to Arizona, a game that I was much more concerned about because Arizona has a much more dynamic offense. They've got some, like, a Chandler Jones on defense, Buda Bakers. Two good, young linebackers, some good guys, Peters up front. Yet they have a lot of talent, and, we hung in there. And then there's some carryover in the fact that we just keep giving up too many explosive plays on defense. I mean, we gave up almost 500 yards of offense. But then they hang in there, and it comes down to a kick, a 37-yarder. Our guy's 3 from 3. From plus 50. One of them was to put us into overtime, and then he misses it. So, and you guys know what our kickers are like, right? Remember that playoff game at TCO, at TCF back in the day? I mean, come on, guy. We haven't beaten Russell Wilson. We're 0 for 7 in our last 7, and then by some mistake, the NFL schedule makers have this game in Minnesota. I don't know why, but it's here. It's in Minnesota. And so, I would, if I were you guys, I wouldn't worry about anything.
Well, that sounds like we're being duped here a little bit there, but yeah.
No,
well,
it's called commiserating.
Commiserating.
Right?
That's
what we're doing. That's what we're doing here. We're commiserating here. That's what
you mentioned the kicker, Blair Walsh, and then we went and got him. We brought him in here because we liked that he missed that that kick.
He did just fine for you guys because that's with Carlson and with everybody else that we get rid of.
He's a really nice guy.
He got off to a good start, Pete. It was a good start
for a football player. Golly, that's Jamal Adams. He's a nice guy. Yeah, really nice guy.
Well, there's just got to be a ton of frustration. I mean, you're really could easily be 2-0. And then the Dalvin Cook fumble, I looked at that a few times. I mean, was it very clear? Is there some controversy, or was that clearly a fumble in overtime there?
Well, when the game you're playing is televised on ESPN 8, the Ocho, they don't bring a lot of cameras with them.
Right.
So we didn't have a good angle. It's one of those things that's like, if it would have been ruled down, it would have stayed down, right? Yeah. There just wasn't enough, either way. You sit back and you go, to point to that play as the one that lost the game, well, it's probably the latest and greatest, the most memorable. But to have so many drives killed by, because of penalties and, Mackenzie Alexander had an interception, hit him right between the 2 and the 4. If the ball was a spear, he'd be dead. I mean, it hit him right in the chest and, he didn't come up with it. Now, we did come up, we play Arizona. We're plus 2 in the take give. We have a pick 6. I mean, how many teams do you know of or lost a game where you're plus 2 in the take give and you scored on defense?
Yeah.
I mean, that does not happen very often, but again, we our offense stalls. We have a mental error in blocking and third and one, we don't get it. Then we punt, and then, you know, then Arizona goes 77 yards on two plays because we turn guys loose. We blitz. We don't get there. We got a guy running wide open down the field. I mean, that's been the bane of our existence. And I'm watching your guys' game against Tennessee, and I'm looking at, I mean, that game should have been 60-50, right? I mean, all the plays that were left on the table by both teams offensively, there were some big plays, and then there was a lot left on the table. And it's like, I don't know if that's just the NFL this time of year, this year, a little different than last year. But, man, we've left a ton of plays on the table. Our defense has given up a lot of big plays. I mean, it's a very similar situation that you guys are in that we're in.
It's kind of a weird matchup, these two teams. I mean, it's you know, they're playing the NFC North this year, the Seahawks, but there's been kind of oddball matchups. And last year, I mean, it's frustrating looking at that. I mean, there was a third down, a fourth down stop that, you know, that would have ended the game, and then two fourth down conversions. I mean, what do the Vikings and the Viking fans feel about this matchup with the Seahawks?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of you guys bring pretty much the same cast of characters in. You know, Russell Wilson is is tough. He's tough because he can move, and you know, I think I see him at least in my experience as one of the most accurate passers in the league, especially when he's on the move. That's why I was so surprised that he missed one in the red zone against Tennessee. So you have to try to find a way that he can't beat you with his legs. And I think for the Vikings, the big thing is not to let Carson get going. Not that Carson is going to put a nail in your coffin, but if he's rushing for 4.5-5 yards a pop, then we're going to struggle with covering your wide receivers. You know, I mean, we're just going to have a hard time. You guys bring three pretty good receivers. I think Freddie Swain is respectable. His second year kid, he's looks like he's doing really good. Obviously, you know, Metcalf is amazing. And then your other guy, I forget his name. He's only number two in the league in yardage right now. So more 20 yard receptions than anybody. And you're playing a team that's been giving up big plays. So, you know, which guy's going to line up in front of Rashad Breeland, and then we'll just cross our fingers and hope that we can keep two safeties deep for most of the game. But we can if Carson starts moving. So that's, I think, if you want to boil this game down to, you know, what needs to be done or what the Vikings need to do, that's it.
Hey, Pete, what is the impression of Kirk Cousins out there? He's such an interesting quarterback, because if you don't watch him and you just look at his numbers, you're going, man, this guy completes year in, year out, close to 70% of his passes, at least in his time out there in Minnesota. You know, you look at him last year, 35 touchdowns to 13 picks. He's got 5 touchdowns, no picks, 71, almost 72% completion this year. Yet you hear complaints, you hear, you know, he's good, he's not elite. Where are you at with him?
You know, you can win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins. I mean, I there's no question about that. He's just not as cool of a guy as a Russell Wilson is, or, you know, an Aaron Rodgers is, or anyone like that. I think what he did against Arizona that changed or that I saw more of was a decision-making process. Arizona plays some man-to-man. He pulls that thing down and decides to run, right? He's just making good decisions. And it's when he's sitting in the pocket and just doesn't quite know what to do with the ball for that fraction of a second. You can see it, you can feel it, and then that's when the sacks and the fumbles and a lot of other things happen. But you're not going to find a guy, you'd be hard-pressed, let's put it that way, to find a guy who's more accurate down the field. And if Seattle, and I think another big key for you guys is, if you don't get pressure on this guy, he's going to pick you apart. I mean, we gave up back-to-back defensive touchdown or offensive touchdowns on turnovers against Carolina. Last year, same guy. It was a rookie. I can't remember his name. Safety, rookie. And on two plays in a row, this kid, one was two recovered fumbles in a row. So we spotted him 14 points. They decided to rush three toward the end of the game, and Cousins just picked them apart. So, you know, you have to make him feel uncomfortable. But before you even get to him, you got to figure out how to slow down Dalvin Cook. And that's our offense, is getting Dalvin Cook going, and then everything else works. you know, we have a lot of three and outs in our offense, and it's usually when we don't do a good job on first and second down. You know, our third down conversion rate is not very good right now, but against Cincinnati, I think we averaged third and 13. I mean, it was brutal because of all the penalties. So, yeah, Cousins, I mean, he's exactly that, right? He's not the first guy you'd have come over and have a beer at your house. And I think that's why people kind of, you know, just kind of shy. You know, they're like, I just can't get on that bandwagon. He's just not, he doesn't have that swagger that a normal quarterback would have.
Hey, Pete, you mentioned the run game with Dalvin Cook. I mean, he got kind of banged up. Alexander Mattison comes in, goes for over 100 last year against this defense. Then, you know, I saw 67 yards versus Cincinnati, and then 177 against Arizona. It looked like the offensive line was blowing some huge holes in that Arizona defensive line. How would you characterize this run game?
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised at how well you know, the offensive line played up front, especially the right side of our O-line with Brian O'Neill, who we just extended. He's one of the better right tackles in the league. And then next to him, we have Oli Udo, who's, he was a young player, and he's the kind of guy we need to succeed. And that's a later round pick at the offensive line. He's very fast, a great athlete, pretty physical. Bradbury's doing a better job at center. He's very athletic, but just doesn't have much of an anchor. Ezra Cleveland, the second-round tackle, he's doing better. And then we still don't have our first-round draft pick. He's still, Christian Darrisaw still not playing. He's been injured. He hasn't practiced at all this whole year. And then we're kind of wondering what the deal is with that. So we have Rashad Hill filling in that left tackle, and he's doing a good job. Tight ends are blocking okay. But, you know, C.J. Ham, our fullback, we do a lot of man-type blocking with the extra tight ends or two backs in the backfield. It's kind of stuff you don't see much anymore. And it really requires all of the linebackers and safeties to really fit where they're supposed to fit. And, you know, and Dalvin Cook is one of the best at setting up blocks. I mean, Dalvin is – he may not be the best runner in the league. You probably saw that guy last week. But Dalvin's the best overall back, I think, in the league as far as a receiver, a blocker, screens, and just pure running the football. So, you know, my fingers are crossed that he's 100% and looks the part when we play you guys.
Pete Bursich, the color analyst on the Vikings broadcast, is our guest here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Seahawks and Vikings getting together this Sunday in Minnesota. And just continuing with Dalvin Cook, I'm curious because we talk about Chris Carson out here. Dave and I love watching this guy play. I mean, he's a monster. He's just a machine out there. Yet, you know, as is true with that position, you get dinged up, you get hurt. And he's missed a handful of games throughout his career. And the knock on him is, well, he's great, but he can't stay healthy. I'm curious what the impression of Dalvin Cook is. Dave brought up when they played last time, Dalvin got hurt. Your running game was just fine even without him. But he's never played 16 games in a season, and now it's a 17-game season, and we're talking about him, you know, with a questionable ankle already. Is the impression that he's fragile, or how do people feel about Dalvin Cook and just his durability?
You know, I don't think they see him as fragile. I definitely don't see him as fragile. But he's, you know, he last year was almost a third of our offense total in yardage. And we were a top five offense in the league last year. That's a lot of yards. Henry from Tennessee was responsible for 33% of their offense last year. And Dalvin Cook was second for the highest percentage of an offense run through one guy. Now, we had a guy here, Adrian Peterson, who is a once in a decade back. I mean, you go Jim Brown, you go Barry Sanders, Walter Payton, and then Adrian Peterson, who would just wear, I mean, one man would physically wear out an entire defense. And he just didn't do it once or twice. He did it game after game after game. It was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen as a player or a coach or an analyst. Dalvin can do that, but he hasn't been able to do that for an entire season. Just like you said, he'll get, he has a little bit here, a little bit there. And so if you just take that little bit of an edge off of him, he becomes not an elite back, but a very good back. So yeah, I'm very concerned about that. If he's not 100%, but I don't think the word fragile comes into play, because the guy plays, you know, fragile is a guy who avoids contact, but yet still gets hurt. Dalvin Cook seeks it out often. He's very physical in pass defense. He's not afraid to stick his nose, and he's actually a pretty, he's a quiet guy, but he's really the biggest leader that we have on this offense. I mean, he's the toughest guy that we have on this offense. And, yeah, without him, oof, I mean, yeah, without him, it makes a huge difference. So, you know, for Seattle fans, the more nicked up that Dalvin is, the less effective our offense is going to be. And it's just that simple.
Hey, Pete, Clint Kubiak is the offensive coordinator. And, you know, my last year in the league, I had Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennison there in Denver, and just love both those guys. But I know Dennison stepped away because of the vaccine. Is he in a consultant role now? Or tell us about that whole thing with the offensive coordinator there.
Yeah, from what I understand, Dennison is consulting. I do not know the details, and I wouldn't be able to know what he does on a day to day basis, so to speak. You know, Clint, I think after two games, the offense is still running very well. It's just we have to get better on third down. Our third down offense is suffering a little bit. You know why that is? Some of it's down in distance, but we just need to work and develop our game more on third down. First and second down, the running game, the play action game, all those things are you know, they're fantastic. Scheme wise, I think he's doing enough little gadgets in here and there. You know, Justin Jefferson threw a pass in the first game, so there's, you know, you get that. I love those play or two a game where you just throw something at the defense that they're not ready for. It just keeps them on their heels a little bit, and you know you want to do that. You know, that's the Kansas City Chiefs thing, right? There's always somebody moving. There's always something going on in the background to distract you. But Clint's done a very, very good job, I think, thus far. We just have to do a better, like I said, just figure out third down and what we want to do, what our identity is going to be as a third down team. And it'll help this offense out even more.
Pete, is this a make or break year for Mike Zimmer? We, you know, again, being on the outside, we read the national, you know, headlines for every team, and here's what's going on in this city and that city. And I feel like I've heard his name or read his name a few times, you know, hot seat and all that, and it's got to happen this year. Is that the view out there?
You know, I think for the fans, he's more on a hot seat than I think with, you know, with ownership. Rick Spielman, you know, as well, is been with the Vikings now for over a decade, I believe. So, you know, he's been around for quite some time. Maybe the two of them are joined at the hip in that respect. But, you know, I don't see, you know, I think for Zim, he has a guy like Clint Kubiak. You let him develop and have someone, because we've had a different offensive coordinator, maybe the same last name, but a different person. I think each of the last four or maybe five seasons. So, it you know, there's been a lot of turnover on the offensive side of the football, and you can't have turnover at the coordinator spot and the offensive line coach spot. Those are the two most important coaches on the offense, and the two of those guys have to work together. And hopefully we can get that figured out. But, you know, the fans, I think that's more coming from the fans than it is from inside, you know, of TCO and with the Vikings organization.
Hey, Pete, I've always loved Harrison Smith. Love watching that guy play in his 10th year. What kind of a leader is he on that defense, and does he still have his fastball?
Yeah, Harrison's still there. I mean, we if you take a look, I remember I looked at the roster that we had on our defense going into the New Orleans Saints game last year, and Harrison Smith and DJ Wonnum are the only two guys that are out there on the field now that were there a year ago. And Wonnum is playing on a different side. So, I mean, you have almost an entirely revamped, you know, defense. Xavier Woods is next to him. I think the two of them, you know, Harrison Smith, his thing is he's one of the most versatile safeties in the league, meaning he can do about everything. He can cover. He can tackle, he can blitz, he can do. And so when he disguises and moves somewhere, you have to keep track of him. That one big play that Arizona had, we had an all-out blitz. Mackenzie Alexander gets beat inside, but Harrison Smith is blitzing up through the A-gap. I mean, you can do all those things with him. And I think Xavier Woods, you can do kind of the same thing with him. So as a duo, the two of them work very well with each other back there. Yeah, but Harrison, you know, he just signed an extension. He's going to be a Viking as long as he wants to be. But he's getting smarter as he gets older. So, you know, you don't get faster as you get older, right? You don't get, yeah. You might get a little stronger, but you play better because you get smarter. And Harrison is one of those guys who loves the game. He works at his trade and he continues to improve. He had 5 interceptions last year. You know, hopefully Woods has 1 already this year. So hopefully between the two of them, we can get, you know, 7 or 8 interceptions from our safety group.
Vikings color analyst Pete Bursich has been our guest here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Pete, a pleasure to speak with you, my friend. Thanks so much for taking the time with us. We appreciate it and enjoy the game this weekend.
God, I'm going to be shocked to see Seattle and Minnesota, but yeah, I'm ready.
He's ready. Let's hope he's not enjoying it too much. Seems like a great guy. I don't want him to go through hard times, but they need to be 0-3.
Yeah, they do. And the Seahawks have had their way with him as of late, in the last 3 for sure. And they've been on primetime games. The Seahawks are 38-3-1 in those primetime games. And yeah, going, I think there was a Monday night. You know, there was the game. That was a Sunday night game last year, I believe, at 2020. It was definitely played at night. And then, you know, I think it was a Monday night football.
Here, right?
Yeah.
Because I remember being up in the – stopping by the suite, you know, because some of the people, the salespeople were there. And it was the Vikings. I remember that. Yep. It was a Monday night game.
Yeah, so they've – and I think he's joking around about it, that it's going to be nice to see them out in Minnesota. The last time we were there was when Blair Walsh missed the kick in the
– Was it 10 degrees or 8 degrees? What was it?
The next week – the next week we went to Carolina as I was doing pre and post, whatever year that was. I think it was 15 or 16. We stopped and changed planes in Minnesota, St. Paul, I guess.
Yeah.
And I kind of sampled where you walk out the plane, the tunnel, you know, area.
Yeah.
It just had like a gap in it there. And
when
I walked past it, I was like, oh, damn.
Just hit you?
It was unbelievably cold. It was a totally different type of cold.
There's a different cold in the Midwest. Having lived in Chicago and St. Louis, it's not. There's cold, and then there's the cold you'll get hurt in.
Yeah. And, you know, and I remember thinking, it's not going to be that big of a deal. And I remember at the time Jim was making a big deal out of the weather. He always made a big deal out of the weather.
Everything was the weather.
Big deal. But I'll tell you what, I think he was right on that one because it was freezing there. But, that was the Blair Walsh missed extra
chippy,
point or field
chip
goal.
Shot, yeah. All right, coming up, Steve Rabel's exclusive pregame interview with Pete Carroll. You're going to hear it next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Pete, thanks again for joining us on this Friday morning. I know you're right in the middle of all your preparations for the game in Minnesota coming up on Sunday, but if I could, I just want to go back for 1 second because you talk about it a fair amount, and I just kind of, without going into too many details probably, but what was Tell the Truth Monday like this past Monday?
Well, it was really important to get to it, because there's, in a game like that, there's a lot of plays in there, a lot of stuff that people could have done, you know, that they would love to have done in the game, and we would love to have called in the game and things like that. So there's a lot of guys that had a lot of, you know, feelings about it, and we just needed to get centered. And it really came down to that we had made some too many decisions after the play that hurt us, you know, and it really felt like it was such an even game as it was, had we not, you know, fallen into 75 yards of penalties in those 5 plays, you know, I think it would have been a big difference in the game. And all of it was aggressive. You know, all of it was being, you know, right, trying to make something happen and all that. And that's why right off the bat, you know, I take the credit for some of that, because if it involves the whole team, then I got them riled up to a point where we're not as functioning as clearly as we need to, and we need to get better. So it's an easy area to get better at, and really easy to focus on doing that too. Now we got to show it, and we have to make the right decisions at the right time.
Right. But you, I mean, you know, you've played the game. I've played the game. You have to be at a certain level to play sure. the game. So there's that fine line, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah. And for years, you know, Steve, I've always wanted to push the limits and make sure that we push to the edge of it and learn how to operate in the craziness and operate when it is like that, you know, and get used to doing that. That's why we always historically have practiced so hard and competed so much, is to try to keep the tempo as high as you can, because you're going to play in it. And so practicing other than that, you know, it's not as realistic. And so we weren't quite as evenly, you know, matched up for mentally as we needed to be. And I just need to do a better job of that.
I know you have officials very often at practice to keep an eye on these things. Do they look for things now like taunting and all that kind of thing at practice?
Yeah, but we have not made a taunting call in practice with our officials yet, you know, and that's, it's something that it might be important, because we have to practice how to react, because this is a reaction that happens, you know, in the fit of rage of what just occurred, and that needs to be controlled. And so we've right. always said, you know, you want to celebrate with your teammates, but sometimes there's nobody around you. It's like what happened in the game, and you know, the only factor there is somebody else, and so sometimes you just can't turn it towards the opponent, and that's what the rules are, and we have to abide by it.
Right. Well, I know that I about lost my mind in the booth. I couldn't believe they made that call, but nobody cares what I think. So I agree with
some of us may.
may. Thanks. Yeah. Hey, since you and Russ have been partnering in this sojourn that you call the Seattle Seahawks season, you guys have won 80% of your games after an in-season loss, and that's the best since the 1970 merger. So whatever it is you guys are doing, seeing what you've done in a loss, you're making it work right the following week. And I expect you're working toward that this week.
Yeah, I really think that there's a tactic to that. And that's approaching every game like it's the biggest game that you got. And it's also approaching the result of whatever happened in that game in the same fashion. And that the most important thing is to let it go. And to get on to the next thing. And that's where the discipline it takes to find the consistency to return to balance after the event that you just took place, whether it's a great win or it's an enormous loss, whatever. It's all the same in that it factors into your focus and can affect your play. So we've worked really hard to be uncommonly consistent about the way we follow up the preparation building towards the next week. And we don't have rivals. We don't have games that are bigger than others. You know, when it's Monday night or Thursday night or Sunday night or whatever it is, that doesn't matter to us. And we've worked really hard to be disciplined about that so that we can perform like we're capable, regardless of what the circumstances are and the outcomes that just happened or the future that may be. And so and in that, we're trying to get ready for the biggest game of the year when you're playing in the Super Bowl. It's going to be you get there and it's the biggest event in the world, and you want to make sure that you function like you're capable. And so we're practicing for that eventuality, you know, throughout. And it takes time to get disciplined to do that well.
Right. And I assume then that also includes the fact that you're going on the road. The same thing every week, preparing that it's the biggest game, whether it's here, whether it's on the road.
Yeah. Well, I really feel like that's an art. And it's like, if you take it, we can step away from this for a sec. It's like if you're a player and you're shooting your shots from the top of the key and you needed a game point, you know, to win the game, well, you want to shoot it just like you did all the rest of the time when you've been working, and whether you've been in your drill work or, you know, in your shoot arounds or whatever, it's the same thing. We want to perform. Well, we want the whole team to do that as well. And mm-hmm. so we're working to understand that discipline and the consistency, and it's our language, it's our approach, our consistency that keeps our guys, you know, in a framework that they can repeat regardless of what's going on around us. That's what we're trying to do.
Pete, you've talked about before how your career has unfolded. You've taken from every place you've been, you've brought something along with you, you've learned mm-hmm. after both great seasons and after getting let go by teams. What did you take from the Vikings working for guys like Bud Grant and Jerry Burns and those guys?
Yeah, I was asked that earlier in the week. They said, what's the one thing you took from Bud Grant? Well, there was no one thing. There was a lot of stuff. And just to be in their organization, you know, they had been together for so long. You know, mm-hmm. Jerry and Bud were together at least 19, 20 years, something like that, you know, 18 by the time I got there, you know. So, but Bud was such an extraordinary individual, just as a human being and as a competitor, an athlete, performer, just guy of the world, you know, was a great hunter, a great fisherman. I mean, he had such great sense about him. There was so much. But if there was really one thing that was so stood out so strongly with him was his ability to observe. And the his observation powers kind of served him in such a good way. He knew people so well. He had great timing. He had a great sense for when somebody needed a nudge, needed a kick in the butt. He could anticipate. He could project things to happen. You know, I mean, he called some shots, you know, in games. Mm-hmm. And at other times, you know, he would be able to call how things were going to go. You know, he had just great sense about stuff. And so to try to draw from that and try to, you know, be a better observer and listener and communicator really with that information was really the thing that I would like to continue to work on, you know, and try to be more in the vein that he was able to be. Just to give you a quick story, maybe we don't have time for this, but I'll give you a quick story.
We got time.
We're playing the Niners, and they're coming off the Super Bowl. It was the opening game of the year, and you know, they have great teams with Montana and all the guys, and Coach Walsh and the whole thing. And the night before the game, you know, Bud said that, you know, these guys have been ahead in a lot of games. They've won easy all, you know, they have not had very many tough games. If we can just be close in the fourth quarter, we might be able to take these guys. You know, we were just an ordinary team up and coming, trying to get it going. And sure enough, as the game turned out, it goes down to the end of the game, and we're in the game. We're within a couple points, and we scored, and we might have gone ahead, and we're kicking off. And Bud says, "Kick it to number 26." He gets in the huddle of the kickoff team. He says, "Kick it to 26. He's going to fumble." And, you know, and I happened to be on the headset listening, you know, at the time. And so I'm up in the box. And so sure enough, we kicked the ball. I think it was Harry Sidney or something like that was the guy. Kicked the ball to him. He comes running back. And he didn't just fumble. That ball came projectiling out towards the 50-yard line, you know. And everybody scrambles on. And we get the ball at the 50, you know, and we're able to put the game away. And it was just one of those moments, you know, like, how would he do that? How would he even call it that way, you know? But he didn't just call it who to kick it to. It all happened. And we did win the game. And it was amazing. It was just. You know, that was the first game that I was with Bud. So that's where it started, you know, so pretty amazing.
I came from a coach who came from that tree, Jack Patera, coached under Bud. The thing that I'll remember about Bud Grant was our playoff game back there four or five years ago now. And it was as cold a day as I ever remember. And Bud was in shirt sleeves for the toss of the coin, for heaven's sakes.
I know. He was such a stud. He just wanted to make everybody feel bad that he could do that. He was 90 years old or something when he did it.
Yes, he's 94 years old. Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope he's around that you can get a chance to shake his hand on the field come Sunday. But you've still got practicing to do and then traveling at the end of the day today. So, Pete, best of luck against the Vikings. It is, I don't have to tell you, a big game. And I know you guys are going to be ready. We appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks, Rabe. See you there.
There you go. Steve Vrabel and the head coach, Pete Carroll. You hear that every single week. Coming up next, our Hall of Famers return in our Why Man of the Week. That's next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Tell me why.
Why, man? Why?
Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
He's a habitual line stepper.
What were you thinking? What are you doing?
Why are you the way that you are?
It's the Why Man of the Week.
We got to get Adam Ray. We got to get Adam Ray. A quote from him there. Say something funny. That's what I'm going to do when I finally
just
meet.
Say something funny.
Adam. Hey, Adam. Hey. You going to say something funny? Say something funny. That dude.
Dance for us. Come on. Make us laugh. He's very good. He's been sending us mean texts because apparently he couldn't get through on the line, but. So we got a couple of that, and his latest tweet is absolute gold. If you're on Twitter, I retweeted it at Bob Stelton, or you can follow him at Adam Ray Comedy. But he's just him responding to a crazy story. I don't even know if the story is real or not, but his questions addressing it.
It's six questions, I believe.
Yeah. So should I read it?
Yes.
Should I?
It's Friday.
All right, I don't know if people want to know about the content of what he's asking about.
Well, I don't know where the story's from. Maybe it's parody. But the headline, I'll just read the headline, then read his questions. The headline is FBI seizes over 3,000 male organs during a raid at a morgue employee's home. That's the headline, the mugshot of a guy who looks like he's out of a horror movie. And then Adam retweeted and said, so many questions. Number one, was 2,000 not enough? Number two, where'd you get your haircut? Now you have to see the picture for that one. Who tipped, no pun intended, off the FBI that you were hoarding You were hoarding wieners. Number four, what's your second favorite genital to steal? Number five, what's the variety breakdown? Number six, who do you think wins the Super Bowl? You guys have to see it.
I guess this fits nicely with why, man.
Yeah, you guys just, you have to read it and look at the picture, and you'll get why it's hilarious. But at Bob Stelton or at Adam Ray Comedy on Twitter, and you'll see what I'm talking about. All right, go ahead, Lefko. What's your second favorite genital to steal?
You want me to play these while you guys are laughing?
Jeez, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Let's move on. All right. Why we do Why Man every week? As you said, a couple of Hall of Famers making a triumphant return to Why Man. Number one, everybody's hero, Colin Cowherd, talking about the Seahawks and Russell Wilson and how important he is to what it is they want to achieve.
Russell Wilson fools you into believing Seattle is a well-oiled machine. And I'll ask the question that I asked in the offseason. What does Seattle do well that Russell Wilson isn't connected to? Take out Russell, they rushed for 60 yards. They had 10 penalties for 100 yards. They were dominated in time of possession. Their run defense was gashed. Tannehill threw for over 300 yards. Their drafting strategy in recent years has been weird as Pete Carroll suddenly has more control in the draft. Their seventh-round running back is markedly better than their first-round running back. Russell makes everything work.
This is one where you go, God, I don't think he's wrong. If you answer his initial question, what do they do that's special, or I don't know how he worded it, that doesn't involve Russell?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess so. Look, they used to hang their hat, and that's what I was saying earlier in the week. What do you, like, for our defense, what are they going to hang their hat on? Is it, you know, giving up the fewest yards? Is it against the pass? Is it sacks? Is it takeaways? Is it their physical? You know, I mentioned the 92 defense and that 2-14 team. Yeah. People come across field, go, man, your defense is tough, man. You hit people. I mean, are they that deep? What do they hang their hat on?
I don't know. Years past, Legion of Boom, you
takeaways.
Marshawn Lynch. I mean, you could point to a lot of things they did well without Russell.
Yeah.
You know, with Marshawn in the running game and everything going on defensively, right now I think it's weird to say, but I think it's a fair question.
Yeah, and so the run game's not going. I think Tyler Lockett is very special in the connection, but that's also related
involved
to Russ.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, but that also takes a lot of options away from you because, of course, everything. That's my complaint about that statement. And then the second one is, it's week two.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's calm down. You want to, if you're saying that in week 10, 12, and at the end of the year, yeah. But, I mean, not after week two.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, let me ask before I play the next one, though. Would that have been a fair question last year? What do they do that's special that didn't involve Russell Wilson?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it would.
Yeah. Okay. Number two, another returning contestant, Stephen A. Smith. Talking about who he likes in terms of NFC West quarterbacks, who he would take.
Shockingly, I'm going to tell you Kyler Murray. And I'm fully aware of the greatness of Russell Wilson. He's a future Hall of Famer as far as I'm concerned. He's carried the Seahawks franchise on his back. I love me some Russell Wilson. He is special. Yeah. But Kyler Murray, ladies and gentlemen, he's putting everybody on notice. He's 24 years old, okay? This brother already has passed for nearly 700 yards in two games this season. 7 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. He's completing over 73% of his passes. And I'm looking at this dude just make things happen.
Yeah, once again, it's week two. Kyler Murray, and this is encouraging for the Seahawks this weekend. He was 80% completion percentage against the Viking defense, but he threw for 400 yards and ran for another 30.
Threw a couple picks, didn't he?
But he did. He did throw, and I was going to bring that up, but 7 touchdowns, that's great, but he's thrown 3 interceptions already.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's doing some things in the plus column, certainly, but he's bringing it back with those turnovers, which are killers. We'll see if that ends up costing him throughout the season, if that continues. Listen, he's a special talent. It's just a matter, is he going to be able to sustain it throughout a season? We thought he would take that step last year. Played well last year. Didn't really go next level, though, if you will, with it. If that's fair.
Right, I agree. I mean, he hasn't gotten into the elite, status or not even really top 10. to me. I mean, I think he's around the middle. I mean, look, the one thing is, I'd say in one regard, he is an extra meeting guy because of his scrambling ability. I remember talking to Pete last year before they played him the first time, and he said he was averaging like 11 yards per scramble.
Yeah, yeah, he certainly can be a problem without question. All right, hey, a reminder for the final homestand of the Mariners season, 710 ESPN Seattle is bringing you a chance to score $7.10 Mariners tickets for the game on Monday, September 27th, when the Mariners host the Oakland A's. Just use the promo code 710 to redeem this special offer in the center field bleacher seats. You got more info at 710sports.com/events. All right, coming up, the professor, John Clayton, will join us. If you guys have questions for John, text him in right now. Last day you can text this number, 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line. Text your questions in there. We'll throw them John's way. Next, it's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.